This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I've played a couple of versions of this, but I have to play the legendary epic version by Darlene Love before we get to Christmas for sure, right? It was always David Letterman's show where she did this song year after year, and it was
so awesome.
It was amazing. So we didn't talk about this with Cusumano, but we saw the highlight during the break, and it reminded Sue and I. How about Charlie Woods getting a hole-in-one at the PNC Championship yesterday?
So fun to see.
It was amazing. But Bernard Langer, who hit an 18-foot eagle putt in the playoff, took out Tiger and Charlie in a great duel. But that's amazing. I guess Langer has a 24-year-old son, Jason. They've won it for the second year. Bernard's on the senior tour. He's 67 years old right now. And, you know, I was watching so much football and basketball yesterday that I didn't even watch this.
Yeah.
And I always tend to like it quite a bit. But look, we had heavy competition noon yesterday, all the football games and the Mizzou Bragging Rights game over here at Enterprise Center. Mizzou legendary broadcaster, a good friend from my days in J school, Chris Trevino, is with us this evening. Trevino, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, Mark. How are you doing?
Good. That was a hell of a game yesterday. I was not there in attendance. I was watching it at home. I don't feel bad about that loss because this is a team that certainly has shown that they can take out the number one team in the country, and they played well yesterday. It was a hell of a game, Chris, wasn't it?
Well, it was. Two really good teams, you know, that hopefully will be in the NCAA tournament in March and make a run, but they were. It was a good game. It was you know, I thought it was kind of back and forth, somewhat choppy at times, but I mean that really as a compliment because I think good teams do that to each other. They make the others struggle, and it was that way. Illinois got up by as many as 10, as you probably know, in the second half. Then Mizzou made a late run and really came down to a late shot. They had a chance to tie it there at the end. They just missed it, but I think the big difference was the free throws. Illinois was almost perfect, missing one for the entire game, the last attempt, and gosh, Mizzou missed, what, 10, 12, I think, by the end of the game. I know it's double figures, which is not good, unfortunately, especially in a close contest.
My guess is that Coach Gates might have had a little free throw shooting contest today during practice, right? Because I can't remember if it was – Coach Stewart told me at one point what he did. I mean, you'd have to – I think a lot of kids have to get like 10, at least 10 free throws before they leave the court, maybe even more than that during a practice. In a row.
Well, they definitely work on it. Yeah, they try and they emphasize it and just repeat. And it's tough because Mark Mitchell, the kid who transferred from Duke, who's one of the if not their best player, you know, gets himself to the free throw line a lot because he's so aggressive. And, you know, he's been really good scoring the ball, but he's struggling at the line. He made just 6 of 12. And that's not picking on him because, again, he's arguably the best player on the team and was good again yesterday, but just left some free throws out there.
Yeah, and that sucks because, again, they could have won that. But let's kind of talk about the positives here. Coming off the KU victory, I've watched this team a fair amount here. They look like they're getting it together. I love this Jacob Cruz kid, and he can really shoot. So we got shooters on this team. It looks like they're trying or they're starting to look like they know how to play together. But, Trevino, this SEC schedule is going to be brutal, isn't it?
Oh, man, it is going to be a beast. I mean, it's incredible how good the league is. At one point Saturday, like Saturday afternoon, and it was a telecaster said this on one of the games. I can't remember which one as I'm flipping through all that stuff. The SEC's non-conference record collectively was 160 wins and 20 losses. I mean, that's unbelievable. And I think there's 9 teams in the new poll, you know, just out today. Tennessee and Auburn are 1-2. You've got 4 of the top 6. I think it's 7 of the top 10 teams in the country are in the SEC. So that is going to be some battle royal, as they say, when they get into the 18-game schedule in January. And, of course, Missouri gets a start right away at Auburn, you know, the number 2 team in the country that's lost once to Duke. That's it.
So you got Alabama State at home next Monday, the same night as the bowl game, right?
Pardon me?
The Alabama State is at home a week from tonight, the same night as the bowl game.
Yep.
And then Auburn, Bruce Pearl, on the road January 4th. Yeah, that is not going to be easy. Then LSU comes into town, Vanderbilt, Florida, and then you're off and running here, and you hope that you can at least protect. I know this is a goal for the team. It always should be a goal. Protect that home court, right, Chris?
Yeah, exactly. That's it. You try to win all your home games and get what you can on the road. But, I mean, it is really going to be tough, but you know, there's no doubt Missouri's a better team than last year, obviously, when it struggled mightily, and the talent level's higher. They've already got a really good win against Kansas that'll carry some weight, obviously, throughout the season and come the selection for the tournament if Missouri's in the neighborhood there. But they're going to have to navigate their way through the toughest conference that they've played in, certainly since joining the SEC, with this many teams and this many good teams. It's going to be really unlike anything we've seen over the years. I really believe it's going to be that tough.
Hey, Chris, Ethan Hannaford here. Thanks for joining us. So it's, you know, I just checked. It's 10 teams from the SEC that are in this new top 25
Crazy.
Poll. So it's even more than you had said. And I know you kind of gave a little bit of an idea of how good this conference is. I'm curious, in your eyes, what is a fair expectation for where Mizzou could fare out in what is such a tough SEC conference this year?
Well, I think honestly, you know, 500 in the league would be really pretty good, because you're going to be playing so many ranked teams and so many highly regarded teams, you know, beyond the top 25, which, like we said, that poll just came out a few hours ago, and the rankings that really count are the seedings, you know, with the tournament committee in March. But I think they and most of the teams in the league, there'll be a few that are up in the top 2, 4, or 5 teams, and nationally, Tennessee, Auburn, Alabama, a few others that have really, really high goals. And I'm not saying Missouri doesn't have high goals, but I think if you go 9-9 in 18 conference games, you're going to be going to the NCAA tournament. There's no doubt in my mind, as strong as that league is. So that would be great. And guess what? That'd be a 9-game improvement for Missouri over conference play last year when it went 0-18. And not trying to be a wise guy there, but that's just the truth. That would be a huge leap in 1 year from no conference wins back up to 9 in conference play, when, again, it will be the highest regarded conference clearly in the country this year, and the highest rated that it's ever been in Missouri's 12, 13 years in the league.
Isn't the evolution interesting from this perspective? You know, when this whole SEC thing came about, the conventional wisdom was, well, we're probably going to get smoked in football, but we can really compete. We can be in the top tier in basketball. And that never really was the case. The SEC got really good in basketball, and obviously we got pretty good in football and we could compete, but it is interesting, you know, because everything's a little bit tossed on its head from where we expected it a year ago or a decade ago, Chris.
Absolutely, Mark. And that's a conversation I've had and comments I've heard from SEC people and Mizzou folks, too, administrators over these now, you know, dozen plus years. When Missouri joined the SEC, the conference was telling Missouri that, you know, we're really looking forward to you coming into the league and helping our basketball profile. And I'm sure Mizzou said, yes, that's what we're going to do. Well, actually, football, you know, thanks to Gary Pinkel's early success, 2 division titles in the SEC East, and then, of course, the 2 championship games against Auburn and Alabama really raised the profile. Missouri's done pretty well, of course, with Coach Drinkwitz winning the Cotton Bowl last year and getting another 9 wins this year. And, you know, basketball has been off and on, really, probably to put it best, through the time in the SEC. So you're absolutely right. It is a little different than how we've thought. It'd be great to get both of the major sports going at once. And not many teams do that. It's hard to do. You look across the country, Power 5 conference schools, there are a handful of them that are top 25 in both sports, but not a lot.
And, you know, one of those teams, and this makes me angry and jealous, but I can't believe that KU is one of those teams, that their football program has really done well.
Yeah, they've gotten better. They have. I mean, basketball obviously is a standard bearer for that athletic department, always has been. And football's gotten a little bit better. They're not playing, I don't think, in quite as tough a conference, obviously, and they haven't necessarily reached the heights Missouri has in terms of winning a Cotton Bowl here in the last couple of years and putting a back-to-back, you know, 9 wins at least seasons. But they are good. They've got a good quarterback coming back next year. If he's healthy, they'll be a dangerous opponent. Missouri plays them. You know, that's the second
that's
game
right.
of the football
yeah.
season. They've started up in hoops again, and now they've got football coming.
I love it.
Quickly,
I love it.
Starting at Faurot Field in September.
Well, let's talk about. I want to talk about the bowl game. Get your thoughts on that. But let's face it, we're already talking about next year and the possibility of being in the CFP next year. I wasn't that high on the kid from USC, Moss, just because he didn't have a lot of ability to run the ball. And I know they were looking at the kid from California, this Bo Prabula, who comes from Penn State. He looks like the guy we should have wanted all along, Chris Trevino. Tell me what you think.
Well, you know, he is an impressive candidate. And this whole thing came about so interestingly. He kind of entered the portal late. And yet, from Penn State's standpoint, like, how could he do that? He entered the portal while the team is playing in the college football playoff. And I think has a really good chance as a favorite over Boise State this week to be in the Final Four. And he was their number two quarterback, and they would play regularly. They would have packages and games for him. He was more of a running threat, really. He had good right. passing numbers, like 26 of 35, a couple hundred yards. But they used him as a runner. He's a solid, strong kid. But experienced, I think has had 5 touchdown passes, 1 interception, and again, runs very well. And they were using him pretty regularly in their games. So they were surprised, I think disappointed that he left them, you know, on the eve of their first playoff game just last week to enter the portal, or else he might have been more highly sought after by teams that had already landed their quarterbacks in the portal. So it's,
well, that's true.
It's interesting how that all worked out. But no, he's going to be a guy that I think, you know, Missouri will lean on, and it'll be a competition with him and Drew Pine, who got a little bit of experience this year with Missouri, and then he's an older guy too. After that, Sam Horn is hurt. He's trying to come back from Tommy John injury, and they've got a young kid coming in, a true freshman. So, you know, there's a very good chance that this Prabula could be the starting quarterback for Missouri when it starts the season, and he's a late acquisition even within the portal, but things kind of fell into place for them getting him, and he did have some other good teams after him, including Iowa, Missouri's opponent in the bowl game next Monday.
So I got a chance to see Coach Drink a week ago at the Jack Buck Awards, and you know I've actually talked to him about this scenario with the Wild West in the portal before. And then a couple of days after the Jack Buck Awards, this story came out in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I'm sure you saw it, where Coach Drink really expressed a lot of frustration with the portal and the way that these things are working. A lot of coaches have done that, so they've changed some of the NIL stuff, Chris. But look, there's still so much confusion out there. You know, you have a portal window right now, then you got another portal window here in a little bit. Then you got one more portal window. It's crazy out there. It's the scenario that these coaches have to deal with. But do you think there's any expectation that this is going to get a little easier into the future?
You know, I don't know. There's hope that it will be. And I was at the press conference when Drinkwitz made those comments that were then published. And he was pretty outspoken, as he can be,
yeah.
about that situation in particular. And it made a lot of sense. But he said very clearly a couple times, nobody's in charge. Who's
yeah,
in charge
right.
of college football, you know? And then somebody said, well, how about you? What would you do if you're in charge? He goes, I don't know that I want that situation because it's so difficult now. But I think they'll try to tweak as they can to make it a little more well, understandable, practical. You know, Penn State's James Franklin, again, was really upset in light of his number two quarterback, but you might say 1A in some ways because he played a lot, leaving on the eve of the game. Again, you know, he made comments, I'm paraphrasing, that the kid can do what he wants. You understand that. But the system, I think he said the system is broke.
Yeah.
We need to fix it. So I think most agree that it's broken, but how do you fix it? Can they figure that out in the near future? We'll see.
Well, and we will see, but I mean, one of the things that stuck out is he talked about, and I get if you're a college kid, you want to play and you want to start. If you're good enough to start, you want to do that. But, you know, you have projects. And even in the NFL, you see what happens. And he said, the one thing I would say about this whole situation, it's not our players. Don't be mad at the players. And he mentions Darius Robinson. He says, look, I wish that everyone realized that these things are not overnight successes. He had to wait 3 years, right? And he's a first-round pick in the NFL earlier this year. So it's complicated, and sometimes it's patience that's, you know, required, but nobody wants to be patient, not in this era.
No, not these days. And I understood, you know, Drinkwitz's point, and it was good. You know, Darius Robinson's a great example, but, you know, other guys will counter with, well, coaches are leaving all the time. Why can't we move around and this and that? And it's just Drink was upset because, you know, you've had a few guys now, they show up and 6 months later, they're gone. You know, they make
yeah.
a commitment, you think, to them. There's NIL and money involved, and then they're gone after the season and not even a full calendar year. So I think eventually it's going to change. Exactly how, I don't know what the solution is, but it's something that is really on the topic, because they're going to be allowed to make money. They're going to be allowed to transfer. But how do you regulate all that? Because I think something's got to come down. I mean, it's like pro sports. It's like free agency. But I say it's even beyond free agency, because normally those guys sign contracts that are multi-years, you know. And that, I mean, Missouri may sign about 15 players just in the transfer portal. You know, it's like a whole recruiting class of transfers. But so it goes in this day and age of football. Other teams are doing the same thing, just as many, if not more.
Yep.
Chris, speaking of things that a lot of people would argue need to be tweaked, there's been a lot of noise after this weekend's college football playoff first round games that some adjustments need to be made after going into perhaps next season or upcoming years. I'm curious, from someone that is around the SEC so much, I think some of the arguments that were made was that strength of schedule was not prioritized enough when this final rankings was put out this year. Where do you lie as far as how the committee ended up coming up with those 12 teams?
Well, you know, I see both sides of it, but certainly I see the SEC up close, you know, every week on the field, and the competition is really incredible, and in this league it's unbelievable. And first of all, in the massive conferences, the power conferences like Missouri's in the SEC, you know, there's so many teams, all schedules within the conference aren't even equal. I mean, Missouri frankly had a great schedule this year, didn't have to play Georgia, didn't have to play Texas, didn't have to play Tennessee, didn't have to play Ole Miss, didn't play LSU. I mean, those, at least going into the year, were five of the top six teams in the league. And I think coming out of the season, there were five of the top seven or eight teams in the league. So you don't know when that comes out on paper how it's going to be. But Missouri had a really good, favorable schedule this season, and will again next season, the way it shapes up right now, we think, going in. But having said that, you know, the conference is so much stronger than the others. The Big Ten is the one league, obviously, that rivals it, but I'm not even sure the Big Ten is as deep as the SEC. I don't think it is when you go down through, you know, say teams 6 through 12. You've got some really good teams at the top. Nobody would deny Ohio State and Oregon. I think Penn State's solid, but, you know, Indiana, SMU, I mean, those games weren't close. You guys probably watched them. They weren't competitive at all. In fairness, Tennessee wasn't good against Ohio State. I thought that game would be closer, and it wasn't. But I think they're going to work on it. There was already talk this year about coming up in the next couple of years, they'll make it 14 teams. You remember maybe the SEC and Big Ten met, and there was some talk that maybe they'll get like four automatic bids each. Well, they probably have to go to 14 total in the playoff for those two leagues to get four apiece. Maybe that's in the offing, because those are clearly the two superpower conferences, and I don't think that's changing anytime soon.
Just some quick thoughts on the bowl game 1 week from today.
Yeah, going to be interesting. This is like the bowl game that never happened in 2020 due to COVID. It was the same matchup, but I remember Iowa was an 11-point favorite in that game. It was the biggest point spread in the bowl game other than Alabama over Notre Dame. Now Missouri's a 3-point favorite. The teams have changed in a few years. Missouri's really become stronger. In the five-year span, I was still solid, always has been, under Kirk Ferentz, his 26th year there. But again, Missouri's without Luther Burden, starting right tackle Memboot, starting tight end Norfleet, linebacker Chuck Hicks. Iowa without its starting quarterback, Cade McNamara, and its starting running back, Caleb Johnson. And his absence may have the biggest impact on the game, because he had more than 1,500 yards rushing and 21 touchdowns, and they really run the ball. So I think Missouri's a slight favorite, makes sense, but bowl games, you never know, Mark, especially in this day and age. But should be a good matchup. It's an easy trip for Mizzou fans and Iowa fans. And the main thing for me, selfishly, is right now, a week out, the forecast, sunny and 57. I'll take it. December 30th in Nashville, Tennessee.
That is awesome. And, yeah, you got a quick trip down there. Well, listen, have a great Christmas. Thank you so much for jumping on here. I'm coming in for the Oklahoma basketball game in mid-February. Ooh. So I've got an invite from the dean of the journalism school at Mizzou to come in for that one. So if I don't see you before that, we'll see you then. But have fun with the bowl game next week. Chris Trevino, thank you so much.
Okay, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. 525, Johnny Holzum and the Well Hungarians coming in. They're going to play a little Christmas music next. Down the chimney tonight. I will have a Christmas Eve audio cut of the day coming up here in just a couple of minutes. And tomorrow on the show, let me kind of run down the schedule. Super hardcore, heavy politics. No, I'm just kidding. We're trying to get away from that. Although we do have Kilmeade on tomorrow afternoon. He'll join us live at 3:25. Dan Buff is going to come in and talk some holiday movies. So you were gone last week. I've actually watched a fair amount of some of the new films that are out and even opening in theaters. And we'll talk about that a little bit. And okay. Dan will have some recommendations for some good Christmas movies as well. Neil Sosik from the Mighty Pines tomorrow. We love Neil. And also some Christmas music that I will spin in the 5 o'clock hour. I'm very much looking forward to that. I've got a bunch of songs picked out, many of whom are friends of mine, artists who tour, some local folks like Emily Wallace and some others, the Funky Butt Brass Band. But right now, we got a local act in town in the studio as well. My friend Johnny Holzem, who is the founder of the Well Hungarians. How many damn years have you guys been out? You just had a big celebration, right? Yeah, anniversary?
31 years.
31 wow. years. Yes, you started when you were 10, right?
Exactly.
You just turned 40 last year, John, right?
I know these things, man. I love that.
How are you?
Life is great, man. The band's doing great, except for Adam. We're missing one of our guys. He caught the little stomach flu
weekend.
But we're good to go, man.
Well, you're going to play a little music. You got a couple of members of the band, but let's talk some music first of all. So the event that you're going to feature here is coming up in Columbia, Illinois on this Friday. We'll get to that here in a second. But you and I went and saw, you were very nice. You invited me to Sturgill Simpson a few months back. And John and I have kind of been like concert dates every once in a while. He doesn't put out as much as I kind of appreciate, but we'll occasionally go. I was just seeing if you were paying attention. We'll go to a show, and you and I had never seen Sturgill,
yeah.
And he was fantastic. And we cut out a little early that night because we're old, and I looked at the rest of the set list and it was pretty damn good. So
yeah,
maybe
man.
We shouldn't have done that.
And he played for quite a long time too. But you're right, you know, getting old and not wanting to stand for too long and or be cramped into some seats and you know.
Well, we'll pick another show or two here, including the one here on Friday. So you have at the Falls Reception Center in Columbia, Illinois. This is a big show on Friday night that you're doing. And is this a charity fundraiser as well or not?
Yeah, it's specifically what it is.
Okay.
It's a great organization, Play It Forward STL. Sam Fisher. Sam's great with getting instruments together, used or new instruments together, and getting them into the hands of children.
Love that.
Yeah, who either their school music programs don't have enough money to supply instruments, or just in individual children who want to learn how to play. And maybe their parents, you know, can't afford a $900 saxophone right now. Just to find out if their kid is going to stick with it.
Find out,
Yeah, so great organization who puts instruments in the hands of thousands of kids over the last decade.
How did you start? When did you first pick up an instrument? I always like this. And we're going to ask your band members here, too, because I always like to hear these stories.
My father played bass guitar, as I do, in a country band. And they rehearsed in the basement, and there were always instruments around, aside from his bass, piano, drums, acoustic guitars. And so it's just being around all that stuff, which is something that we're big on doing. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Having the kids be around that stuff, but being around it and just, you know, I wanted to emulate my dad. My dad did it. I want to do that. Wow.
It's unique, though, that you started with the bass, though, isn't it?
Well, I didn't start with the
bass.
Actually, I started with drums.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Yeah. And then I found out about Greg Bunton, so I figured I'd better not try to play drums any longer. But yeah, it started there. And, listening to, again, his country band rehearse in the basement, and everyone, Johnny, why don't you come over here and play a song with us? And
little Johnny,
yes.
Little Johnny, come up. Greg, how did you start? When did you first pick up? Was it the drum kit or something else?
Well, yeah, my neighbor got an electric guitar when he was a kid, and I was like, man, how awesome is that?
How old do you think you were at that time?
Oh, 10,
yeah,
11,
okay.
And he's learning how to play Poison and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I want to do. And my parents are like, very much in what John just said, they're like, all right, here's an acoustic guitar. Learn how to play this. And I said, that's not what he's doing. That's not what he's doing. So another one of my friends had a drum kit, and very much the same way he said. They're like, we'll go out and we'll went to Fred Pierce, local drum shop in town, spent $100 on a drum kit and brought it home thinking that he's going to play it for a little bit and it's going to be done. Well, joke's on them, because here I am still playing.
See, and drum parents have to be the worst, because I think with everything else, you can say, okay, my kid's playing in the garage. But with drums, you can't get away from it, right?
No,
if you're playing your drum kit, they can hear it everywhere.
Oh, yeah. The TV only went so loud, and after a while of me playing the exact same beat to every single different song,
right?
They're like, I would hear them, they'd either flash the lights or pound on the wall, and I'm like,
Time to go to bed. Joey Minor.
And it's coming to roost as well because his son is now starting to play.
Oh, that's great. You deserve that. Yes, you deserve that. Joey, how about you? The guitar. Did you pick up the guitar first?
No. When I was five, I picked up the violin. My dad played mandolin in a bluegrass band for 17 years with George Ports.
Well, that's awesome.
And I came home from school one day when I was five, and there was a brochure for Suzuki Violin at SIUE, and I just started, so I've been playing the violin for 35 years now.
That's amazing.
And wow. So I just picked up the guitar when I was 12, and
So I bought a Fender Mustang in, I'm going to guess it was 1978 when I was 12 years old. Wanted to be a rock star, right? I was just getting into, it was Boston and Led Zeppelin and then probably Tom Petty right there. It was a really cool Fender Mustang that had like blue racing stripes, but nobody played a Fender Mustang back then. And it had, I think there was something about it that was cheaper than they are today. Like Cobain played a Mustang, I think, too. But anyway, I think the only song I learned how to play was Smoke on the Water. My dad, if he's listening right now, he's like, drove him crazy. And then I realized pretty early, I think you have to. See, the one thing that happened with the guitar is I didn't realize you had to practice. I'm like, oh, I thought this all came naturally. So I sold that guitar. I mean, maybe I bought it for $200 and sold it for more than I bought it for. So it turned out to be, $25 more or something like that. But I didn't lose any money on the deal. But that's kind of what took me into radio because I knew I couldn't play music. So I wanted to play other people's music. Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense, man.
And feature cool rock stars like you guys and play music on the show.
A little segue of what you're talking about, that guitar that you ended up not playing. There are so many of those guitars and saxophones and flutes and clarinets or whatever laying underneath someone's bed or in their closet that's been in there for 20, 30, some longer than that, years, that just collecting dust. It's not being used. And those are the perfect things that we need for Play It Forward.
That's a good point.
For people to bring to the event.
I love it. All right, so before we play some music here, get all the details out about the event so people know.
This Friday, 27th, it's at the Falls in Columbia, Illinois, the banquet center there. It's all ages. $15 in advance if you go online and purchase tickets, $25 at the door. But if you bring an instrument at the door, you get in for free. And a bona fide instrument, truly, not a kazoo or something silly like that, but a bona fide instrument that a child can use in a school music program. There'll be food and, of course, adult drinks as well. But the lineup, there's Well Hungarians, Shotgun Creek, great country band from the east side. Jeff Batson, one of my
best friends. Yeah. He's awesome.
Jeff's a Grammy-nominated songwriter. And then Ashley Heflin. Ashley's a great singer out of kind of the northern North Edwardsville area, that kind of, I guess, Jersey County kind of area. And then lastly, a young man by the name of Ethan Carl is going to be opening up show, doing a little duo thing. So a little bit of a big variety of music and some crossovers, some people sitting in with these people and with other people.
So that's fun, though. The collaborations are cool, right?
Yeah, it'd be a very interesting night. And the objective not only is to raise, is to collect instruments, but it's also to raise money for Play It Forward, because when they get instruments in, quite often they have to be repaired and upgraded to make them in playable condition, and that costs money for them to do that. So having some funds available for Play It Forward STL is also an important thing, and Samantha is so great about making that happen.
So you're saying my comb with wax paper, not going to cut it to get into the door.
You could sit in and do a song with that.
Remember when we used to do that, though?
I did not.
If you didn't have a kazoo, that was kind of your kazoo, I think. Yeah, exactly. Very good, John. That's why you're a professional, right? Congratulations. Are you going to play a little Christmas music for us?
Yes, we will. And the thing is this is our sick bandmate's song that he does. So we'll see how we do with this.
Okay.
All right.
So, Adam, this is for you, brother.
You guys take it away. The Well Hungarians on 97.1 FM Talk. We're just arranging some mics.
Bells will be ringing the sad, sad news. Oh, what a Christmas to have the blues. My baby's gone, I have no friends to wish me greetings once again. Choirs will be singing Silent Night, Christmas carols by candlelight. Please come home for Christmas. Please come home for Christmas. If not for Christmas, by New Year's night. Friends and relations, send salutations. Sure as the stars shine above, but this is Christmas. Yes, Christmas, my dear, the time of year to be with the one you love. So won't you tell me you'll never more roam? Christmas and New Year's will find you home. There'll be no more sorrow, no grief and pain. And I'll be happy, happy once again. There'll be no more sorrow, no grief and pain. And I'll be happy Christmas once again.
Oh, that was lovely, Johnny Holzem. Thank you so much. The Well Hungarians, they're going to play on Friday night at the Falls Reception Center in Columbia, Illinois. I love that, and forgive me for not being up to speed on the charitable component here with Play It Forward, because that's great, and I love everything about that. My daughter, Joey, she plays violin at 9 and a half right now. So she chose, last year, they could go into fourth grade with either technology or music again, and she chose music, and she likes the violin quite a bit. So
that really makes me smile.
Yeah,
I love hearing that.
She's very, look, all my kids are very musically focused, and it would be devastating if they weren't, right? But the other two don't play. My older kids don't play instruments, and I think they tried for a while, like me, like maybe they had a guitar. But I secretly hope that she kind of keeps up with it. She's got a good voice, too, so she can hold the note.
Well, bring her out, man. I mean, for a brief time.
Should on Friday night.
Greg, you know, we talked about this quite often, and Joey, we how much we love having kids come up on stage when we do all these shows. Heck, Greg's giving away more drumsticks. And
and my two kids feel, Delaney and Liam, feel that feel like they are owed the chance to be up on stage and sing a song. So whenever they come out, they're like, hey, come on, Dad, let's go. It's time.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. Well, so like when I was, I'm trying to think if I was 12 at the time, but when I lived in Chicago before I moved here, there were some kids on my block that I was friends with, and the kid next door played a harmonica, and we started a band, and the band was called Series 2, and I think I played a tambourine or something ridiculous like that. But more importantly to my musical evolution, my friend Jim had a brother that was significantly older. Like, he might have been 8, 9 years, 10 years old, I don't know. But there's a place in Chicago called the Kingston Mines. It's a legendary blues club. And it's unique because there's two stages. There's like one stage facing one way and the other stage facing the other way. So one act will be on one stage and then, you know, you kind of take a break and the other starts right after that. The Stones have played the Kingston Mines before.
Yeah.
But they used to do this thing on Sunday afternoons, if I remember correctly, and I don't even know how often they did it, where it was a matinee where you could take kids. So my friend's brother, Chris, took us as 11 or 12 year olds to this blues bar, and I saw this dude named Lefty Diz was his name. He played a left hand guitar, a right hand guitar with the left hand, you know, turn it upside down. But that was my first exposure to live music in my life. And that was the moment where I'm like, oh my God, this is so cool. Like, seeing a guy play guitar, and that was, I was already hooked with music, but I think that hooked me even further, really.
It's one thing to see that for the first time in a live, truly live music setting. It's yet another when those kids get to touch that instrument. Or,
yeah,
again, going back to when we have all ages shows and we bring the kids up on stage, you know, Joey will stand there and just let him strum his guitar during a song. And that hands-on thing, man, you see them light up. And that
I love it.
That,
yep.
That gets that ball rolling from there. So whether their parents can get them an instrument, great. If they can't, play it forward, STL.org. is the place to go to get a hookup with an instrument.
Awesome.
For that kid.
Go see the Well Hungarians on Friday night. Give the website out one more time for the show details.
They can go to seethefalls.com for tickets, or they can just go to our website, wellhungarians.net, orwellhungarians.com. And the details are on all of our social media pages.
John, great to see you again. It's been like 2 times in 2 months. That's kind of rare after the pandemic.
I feel special.
I feel special too. But thank you for playing the Christmas music. That was awesome. Joey, great to see you. Thank you for playing the drums on that song. That was the drums were in particular really, really good on that.
Right? I'm making sure you're coming through.
The hi-hat was a little loud, but other than that, it was okay. But thank you, boys. I appreciate it. We'll see you. Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Mark. Merry Christmas.
You know, Sue, one of the worst things as a radio host over the years is you have great guests on, and then they're saying goodbye to you, and as they leave, they tell you a story that's really good that they should have told on the air, and that's what happened with the Well Hungarians here, because you guys, I ordered them to stay in here. You had a gig the other night, John Holzem, and what happened?
Friday night, we had a private event for a particular firm in St. Louis, big Christmas holiday party, and that firm happens to have some affiliation with St. Louis's very own Grammy award-winning multi-platinum artist Nelly.
Yeah, we've heard of him, right?
Yes, we have. And so end of the night, we're finishing the last thing. I'm not kidding, done. We're just saying, thank you, folks. Good night. Good night. And all of a sudden, some guy steps up on stage, and lo and behold, Greg, who is it?
It's Nelly.
Oh wow.
Staring at me, giving me the, come on, let's go, let's go. And I'm like, yeah,
so it just all happened fast.
Oh, yeah. Boom, boom, boom. I'm like, Joe, go.
Yeah, he looked at me and said, what are we playing? I said, ride with me. He said, let's roll. And I just kicked it off. We went. It was the most fun thing I've ever done. It was so cool.
Better send me a clip of that.
I can do that.
I can't believe that.
And if anyone listens, they can see it on our social media pages, too. It's great, man. He's having a blast. We're having a great time. My God, we're standing right next to Nelly doing this song, his song.
That had to be so much fun, have that moment like that, right? That's even better than knowing that Nelly was going to perform with you. To have it be impromptu like that is even cooler.
Yeah. People putting coats on, walking out the door, heading one direction, and all of a sudden, every coat hit the floor, and everybody was right in front of stage and just getting after it. It was awesome.
And making us feel good that he obviously saw us perform enough that he's like, come jump in with these cats.
Well, Hungarians have been around forever, and you guys are awesome. So thank you so much for sharing that story, because I couldn't let you out of here. Merry Christmas, guys.
Great, Merry
That's
Christmas.
That's amazing. I love it. Sue and I were both like, hey, you got to wait a second. They're like, oh, we can tell you next time. No. We're going to do it this time. I got to do this here.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, let's see if I have time for both of these, and I might, because this is a crazy story that we played earlier this afternoon about a situation with some squatters in Georgia. And actually, as I look here, so listen to the story. This is a TV story about a woman that went back to her house that she owned. Squatters were there, and then she ended up being the one that was arrested.
Squatting, and if they have to get somebody killed, they'll do it. Calm down.
From Clayton County's Sheriff's body camera, you can see the homeowner, Lalitha Hale, taken away to jail. Not the alleged squatter at this Livingston Drive home.
She's going to be charged with criminal damage to property for all of your belongings. Criminal trespass as well for her coming in here.
I spent the night on a mat, on a concrete floor, in deplorable conditions, while this woman, this squatter, slept in my home.
Olitha Hale says this all started back in August when she called police after finding Sakemia Johnson in the house.
How can she not be a squatter when I don't know this person? I've never had any type of contractual relationship with this person.
But a Clayton County magistrate judge ruled under the new Squatter Reform Act, Sakemia Johnson did not qualify as a squatter because she is related to a previous evicted tenant's partner.
What?
That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
It is such a bizarre story to think that the woman who owns the home, because there was that weird relation. Who cares about that relation?
What does that have to do with anything?
Well, the only thing I would say is that, you know, when they write these laws, statutes, they're very particular. And if you got a lawyer that wants to do one thing with a particular part of a statute, I guess they can do it. But that is a crazy, crazy story. And then, this is pretty funny, because all of a sudden, I don't know if it was because of the election, but my wife is not typically someone who would come in from the car in particular and say, hey, you know what I heard on Fox News? She's listening to music, but all of a sudden she's listening to Fox News. So yesterday on a Sunday, of all things, she's listening to Fox News, and she comes and she goes, oh, you got to find this audio of Trump. And lo and behold, I didn't, because Ethan pulled it anyway.
Woke has to stop, because along with everything else, it's destroying our country. We're going to stop woke. Woke is bullshit.
I think that says a lot. Have a great night. Christmas Eve, We're back tomorrow at Christmas Eve.
Get more at 971talk.com.